We're doing the Chazon Ish. We're off to the second chapter, page Tet Vav, the letter Beis. Vilehamura emunava bitachon achat hi. Based on the way we've been describing things, so then emuna and bitachon are really one and the same. Rak emuna yamabat haklali shel be'aleha. Emuna is the general outlook a person has, v'abitachon hamabat shel ha'ma'amin al atzmo. And bitachon is the way you look at yourself to a degree. Ha'emunah bivchinat halacha, v'abitachon bivchinat ma'aseh. Emunah is the concept, the ideal, the way of life, and bitachon is the enactment, living it out, as he described. Emunah is the general belief that Hashem runs the world. Bitachon is when things are rough and one is scared, when one is uncertain what the outcome is going to be and one is very concerned what the outcome is going to be, that's when bitachon kicks in. That's when one should have bitachon that Hashem is still running the show. Again, not that the outcome will be good, because you have no idea whether it will be good, but that realization that even now Hashem is running the show. It's very easy to have bitachon when it's not the time to have bitachon. When things aren't rough, when you're not scared, it's very easy to be confident that Hashem runs the world. But how difficult it is to have bitachon at the time when one is really put to the test, when one really has to act according to his bitachon. Bitachon is easy to express with one's lips, because the expression is theoretical. It's easy. You have fantasies. You have imagined faith. And that's a very comfortable place to be. And then a person fools himself and fools others that he has such tremendous faith. A person can give others the feeling that he has more bitachon than other people who are his equals. ולאמיתת הדבר משמש במידה זו להטבת חלומות נעימים על העתיד הכמוס. When in fact a person uses the concept of bitachon simply to embellish his dreams of a pleasant future. People are very easy when they speak about bitachon and life is good. I'll give a small example. We once had a neighbor that confided in me that after he did tshuva, his mother passed away, and then they had children, and things were a little tight, but they had this inheritance. And whenever things got tight, they'd dip into the inheritance. And so they'd always speak about how God takes care of things, everything will work out. He said, we thought we had bitachon. We thought our bitachon was in Hashem, our bitachon was in the inheritance. We would always say, you know, God will take care and dip into the inheritance. And then God will take care and dip into the inheritance until it was finished. And suddenly they had nothing to dip into. And then they really had to say, God will take care. And then it wasn't so easy. He said to me, it was a rude awakening because all along they were convinced they had such bitachon. A similar story, but the opposite extreme. I have a very dear friend who was forced to see his own marriage disintegrate before his eyes. And things happened beyond his control, and as much as he tried, there was nothing to do. And suddenly he was faced with life not the way he planned it. Had to deal with raising his kids, not the way he planned it. And watching him contend with the challenges, real challenges, things beyond his control, watching him stand up to the test and come the next morning to Daven Shachris, time and again, To me, that was a lesson in bitachon. I've often felt that people walk down the street next to this person and they don't appreciate they're walking next to that tzaddik. I look at him, I say, there's an angel. People look for an angel, whether he's eating badatz, whether he does all kinds of external stringencies. Very often the true angel is someone that externally seems like everyone else. Yet internally, they have to contend with tremendous, tremendous hardships. And they do it. And they do it, and their remarkable dedication, that's where you start saying, wow. I told you guys the story of the guy in the machon was engaged to marry a girl. I didn't tell you the story? Okay. Nope. We had a guy here, this goes back many years. I think it was my first year in the machon. He was engaged to marry a certain girl. One day he calls me up, he says, can I come by and ask you a question? And I won't forget, I was standing building the bookcases in our house. At that time we had bookcases made of boards and cinder blocks, these big cinder blocks. And he comes over, I have boxes all over the living room, we had just moved. And I'm schlepping as we're talking, I'm putting boards, blocks, svarim. Boards, blocks, svarim. And he says to me, you know I'm engaged. I say, yeah. He says to me, well, I just read in Kitzur Shulchan Aruch that I'm not allowed to marry the girl I'm engaged to. So I'm holding a cinder block and I'm about to drop it on my foot. I'm like, okay, one second. Put it down. I said, okay, where in Kitzur Shulchan Aruch did you read that? So we open up the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, and he's right. Now the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says two things. He says, in his circumstance, he's not allowed to marry the girl, but if he would already marry her, then he doesn't have to divorce her. There are situations like that where a person is told, halachically, this isn't someone you should marry, but if you did already, you don't have to get divorced, you could stay together. So it took me a few seconds to grasp what was going on. And then I didn't want to make a big deal of it, so I continued loading my svarim to the bookshelf and carrying the cinder blocks. And I said to him, tell me if the halacha would say that you're not supposed to marry her, but if you did, then you don't have to get divorced. Would you still marry her? You understand the question, right? So I'm carrying the cinder block, and he says to me, I don't understand your question. So I thought for a second, is he American? Does he speak English? And I said, yeah, he speaks English. So I'm standing there holding the cinder block, and I say, well, if the halacha would say that technically... He said, I understood what you said, I just don't understand what the question in what you said is. I said, what do you mean? He said, if the halacha says I'm not supposed to marry her, then why do you have a question about whether I'll marry her? And again, I had to hold real tight not to drop that cinder block on my foot. I'm like, oh, that's Yiras Shamayim, meaning no one would know, no one knew. And he said, even though no one would know, if this is the halachic expectation of me, why are you asking me questions? I could outsmart the halacha, I could get married, and then no one would tell me to get divorced. Why do you think I would be interested in doing such a thing? Now he's already engaged to the girl. So that was a lesson to me, a little bit about what it means to be a true... Ma'amin boteach. I assume you guys are curious. So the end of the story is they were allowed to get married. Technically, halachically. No, he wasn't a kohen, no. I didn't go into the details of the story on purpose. What? No, l'chatchila, he was allowed to marry her.
But if it says you're not supposed to engage a person, but if you engage, it's all right. So you shouldn't even think about it anymore.
Doesn't say engaged, said married.
Huh?
They weren't married yet. It says married.
Right, okay.
So I'm saying, we have to realize that the Chazon Ish purposely went on a tangent here. He said something that at first glance is not relevant to the point. He said, you'll see a lot of people that speak bitachon and give you the feeling that they're one up on you. They have real bitachon. Don't be so quick. He didn't say don't be so quick to buy into it, but he said, you know, those people are taking something which is really an action and they're using it as a theory. He says, you're right, there's a theory of emunah, but bitachon is what happens when push comes to shove, when you have to stand up to the test. V'omnam b'zot yivchan im piv v'libo shavin. But in this, a person can test if their mouth and heart are really equal. Do they really live up to the ideals they speak about? Ha'im boteach u'be'emet o'ach limed l'shono l'tzafzef bitachon. Does he really have bitachon? Is he really at a point where he's saying, if this is what God says, I'm going to do it, and God can control the world, and at any moment he can change our fate? Or has he only taught his tongue to chirp bitachon? Litzafzef means to chirp. He's comparing him to a bird. He can make the right sounds. He taught his tongue, litzafzef, to chirp bitachon, bitachon. Uvelibo lokonina. But in truth, bitachon has not found a nest in his heart. Kasher nifgash b'mikre hadoresh bitachon. What happens when a person meets up with a situation that requires bitachon? Vasher b'shazo tafkido shel bitachon lenalo. At that moment, his bitachon should be the guiding force. That should be the guiding principle. Lachlimol rapoto. That is what should cure him. Haim b'sha'a kasha lazo pana l'bitachon v'yivtach bo. At that difficult hour, does a person really have bitachon? O davka b'sha'a zo lo pana elav. Or is it that specifically at that time, a person does not look at his bitachon? U'pana l'ravim v'satei chazav. But on the contrary, he looked at all kinds of pointless amulets, at pointless ways of trying to attain what he'd like. Elem tzeim megunim v'tachbulot shav. Has a person turned to things that he should really be ashamed of, things that really have no hope? Where was a person's focus? I think one of the ways we develop this is in our prayer. When we daven, I often would challenge myself to focus on one sentence in tefillah. We like to think about focusing all of tefillah. So when I was first year in Beis Medrash, I felt like it's not working. So first I bought an art scroll, or another version of a siddur with explanation. And then I started studying tefillah. And I saw that it wasn't enough. So what I started doing was every Matzei Shabbos I would learn one sentence out of tefillah and challenge myself the whole week that when I hit that sentence, I focus. That I demand of myself that. And then next week I add a second sentence. And I found that helped me start focusing more in general. I think if we pause between blessings and think about the practical applications in our lives, so then tefillah has more meaning. If a person says, Hashiv shofteinu kvar shana v'yatzeinu kvar tchila, bring back the judges like they used to be, and he doesn't think about the injustices that are happening today, Jews that are under house arrest, and Jews that have property and homes taken away from them, and all kinds of injustices that unfortunately are happening day in and day out, so then his prayer is going to have less meaning, if any at all. If a person says the prayer about bringing the Jews back from the diaspora and thinks about his family and the Jews in the diaspora, so then the prayer has meaning. if you read the words and read the art scroll, you could end up just chirping the art scroll too. You just get used to the English, just like you'd get used to the Hebrew. So I know those of you who are here only 2 months, that sounds far out. But believe me, you'll be here 3 years, you'll see it can happen. In the beginning, everything's exciting. But slowly you get used to things. And I think that if we take time to focus in our tefillah, so then that is one way of developing our emunah and our bitachon. We often have students that have hardships with the government in attaining visas and obtaining permits and securing their place on the list. And one of the rabbis here always says, did you tell the students to pray? And I'm always wondering whether we should say that or shouldn't say that. And he's probably right that when we're faced with challenges, very often we go into that realm where we think, what can I do to resolve this? That's true. But do we also think, have I turned to God? You know, He can resolve this. If we go to one extreme, that's not good. If we go to the other extreme, it's not good. We need to do both. The fact that we only fight in the practical front and forget the spiritual front, so that's not good. That's what Chazon Ish is saying here. That's where our bitachon has to kick in. So I think this is a hard thing to work on, but it's a necessary thing to work on. And like the Chazon Ish here, he took the time to point out, don't kid yourself. Speaking bitachon to other people is not real bitachon. That's not what it's all about. The question is, what's really going on inside? And I'll be honest with you. I find this is a hardship that I repeatedly have to contend with. In my own life, when hardships come up, my first reaction is the fight or flight. You guys know? Adrenaline. Fight or flight. When difficulties come up, I'm always surprised at how my mind first thinks, what can I do? You know, fight or flight. Very, very basic. And it can sometimes take minutes and sometimes hours and sometimes days till I can bring myself to the point of discussing it with God in prayer. It's a disappointment to me because I'd like to think that the first thing I do is turn to God and talk to Him and say, okay, help me out here. But I find that it's something to work on. You know, we're reading it here, and even as I read it, I'm reading it for myself as much as for you guys. You know, it's I think that it's something that's very hard to work on, but if a person is aware of it, so then slowly a person can develop it. Maybe we'll end with a story. Two stories. There's a person in this yeshiva called Rabbi Listman. You guys probably know him, right? So I find that I'll tell you two stories and you'll see the common theme in both of them. We once had a class in our house. We used to live down the block. So we had a class in our house, and a minute before the guys showed up, someone came to the door with money to give to the poor. So he gave me a large sum of money, and just after I closed the door, the guys knocked from the machon. So I'm standing there holding a large sum of money. I wasn't sure what to do. I quickly thrust it somewhere in the kitchen. I went and opened the door. Okay, we're at class, we're all sitting in the living room, we're learning, we're singing, everything's very nice. And at the end of class, the guys leave, and I go back to the kitchen and the money's gone. Now that's not a very comfortable feeling. I call Rav Listman and I said to him, look, there was only one guy who was in the vicinity of the kitchen during class. I know who it was. What do we do now? Not a comfortable situation, right? 5 minutes later, I call him back and I say, you know, funny thing. I could have sworn I put it in drawer A, but now as I'm looking and looking and looking, I found it in drawer B. So the money was there. So there's nothing to think about what to do with this guy because I'm in the wrong. I must have put it in drawer B. I was sure I put it in drawer A. So I put it in drawer B. So you'd think the story ends there. No. So Rav Listman says to me, okay, what do we learn from this story? I said, what? He said, if you have money, you don't leave it lying around, and even if people are knocking on the door, you put it in an envelope and you put it in its right place. Now, no one likes to hear that, right? Why is he telling me, is he my father? But you know what? He has a point. You know how many times since then I've had money in my hands, there was a knock on the door, someone's calling me, the phone's ringing, a million things going on, and I hear his voice in my head and I say, you have money in your hand, you don't put it down, you put it in an envelope, you put it in its right place, and then I go and deal with it. I try. That's the first story. The second story is what? Yeah. The second story is we were debating. There was a yeshiva I taught in 4 or 5 years ago, and they offered us a free apartment. They said, come teach by us. We want you close to the students. They offered us a free apartment. And we couldn't decide if we wanted it or didn't want it, if we wanted to move there or not, all kinds of hardships with educating the children. So Rav Listman is so honest that even though he's partial, you know, it would affect the machon if I was living somewhere else, I said to him, I want to sit with you. I want to hear what you think. I sat with him, and before I sat with him, he said to me, why don't you make a list of pros and cons? Why do you want to move there? Why don't you want to move there? What do you gain? What do you lose? And then we'll talk. And I felt like saying, hey, I always tell the guys that. I need someone else to tell me that. You know? So the whole bus ride there, my wife and I are going to see this apartment they're offering us. And I'm writing down the pros and the cons. By the time we got there, we knew we didn't want to move there. Just writing it down, it was very clear. Having written it out, it was very obvious. We don't want to move there. Why am I telling you these two stories? Because I noticed twice in my life that there were things that theoretically I should have been able to figure out. And along comes Rav Listman and spells them out to me. And suddenly, hey, okay, I can do this. Coming back to the Chazon Ish. I'm spelling out something which sounds simple and obvious. You run into trouble, things are not working out right, talk to God. Bitachon involves that memory that God, or that connection to the concept that God controls the world, even when I'm super concerned about what the outcome is going to be. You know what? Sometimes we need someone to tell us, talk to God about it. So I don't know where you'll be and where I'll be when this happens. So I'm just saying, invoke what we've said now. Just like in my life, I have to keep reminding myself when things aren't running the way I want and I'm super concerned. So I tell myself, okay, talk to God about it. So now you guys have the same tool. We just saw it in the Chazon Ish. And if I have Rav Listman's voice in my head, so you could have the Chazon Ish's voice in your head. Quoting the Chazon Ish.